gentlemen, welcome you all to Drive Through HR. And today, this is Nisha and Mike joining with you all with our series, HR Horror Stories. As you all know, we kicked off the series in the beginning of this week and had a fantastic response. And this is Friday, and we are so excited to kind of wind up the session with a wonderful, wonderful guest, Frank Zupan. Frank, welcome back to Drive Through HR.
Thanks, Nisha, and thank you for having me on. It's been quite a while since I've been on the show. I think it's been 2 or 3 years, actually, since I've been on a chat. I think the last time was with William, but it's been quite a while, I know. So it's great to be back on and great to have some fun with your theme week here of HR Horror Stories. I think we'll have a fun time with this.
Absolutely. Well, we are glad to have you here again. We didn't know we took that much long time to, you know, connect up with you and to have you on Drive Through HR. So, Frank, why don't you kick off the show by giving our audience a brief intro of who you are and what you do, and then we will move on to our topic of the week, HR Horror Stories.
Will do. Thanks again. As you've introduced me, I'm Frank Zupan. I am the Director of Talent Acquisition for Associated Materials, which is a large residential construction materials manufacturer and distributor. So we have several manufacturing plants. We have an extensive distribution footprint, a very interesting and somewhat complex business model that keeps us very busy, and we have a lot of things going on here, so that's fun. And I've promised my colleagues and my boss that I'm not using any current material, so the disclaimer comes out right away. I'm using only stuff that the statute of limitations has been fulfilled on, so I think we've still got some fun stuff here, though. So I was gonna start off with one that was interesting, which is the great failed drug test experience that most HR people who have been in a hiring capacity have had somebody fail a pre-employment drug screen. And you know, it's kind of the typical part of the business. If you have it as a pre-employment qualification, You have some folks that aren't going to pass that. Well, I was actually head of HR for a staffing company at the time, and we had a contract with a fairly large local bank, and we're supplying them with some temporary services, just different technician services and whatnot. And the way our contract worked was we were actually allowed to hire people and put them on site while they were going through the pre-employment process. So that was a normal part of business. So one of the individuals who we had started on site happened to fail his drug test, and I get the report back. So, of course, you have to go through your HR process of going on site, removing them from site, and terminating their employment, because that's what the terms of the employment are. But where it got interesting was a day or two later, this young man called me and asked me for a copy of the report from the drug screening agency, and I'd actually never had that happen before. Now, that's interesting. Now, I wonder why he would need that report. So I figured I'd just go ahead and ask him. And he said, well, I bought and paid for one of those drugstore masking drugs, over-the-counter masking things that's supposed to help you pass a pre-employment drug screen. And it's got a money-back guarantee. I'd like to get my $50 back. And I thought, oh, okay, that's interesting. So I actually didn't know such a product was on the market at the time. This was a few years back. I'm not even sure if they still market that stuff. So like a good HR person, I certainly called our employment attorney and said, now this is an interesting one. Never had this happen before. And he said, he advised that we probably shouldn't share that record since it was our business record. We paid for it, so, and there's nothing inherently preventing us other than wanting to maintain our business record and probably wanting to maintain a clear process if it ever came up in the future. But I thought it was interesting that this young gentleman had the temerity to actually call and ask for a copy of his failed drug screen because he wanted to exercise a money-back guarantee on a masking product. So that was fun. You ever have any like that one, Mike?
Frank, I have not. This is Mike Vandervoort. Hey, Nisha, I'm gonna take over and ask you a couple
sure.
questions. I have not. Before we go to the next excellent Frank Zupan story, follow along on Twitter at hashtag DTHR, DriveThruHR, and also hashtag HR Horror Stories, which will be the last day of the week that we're using this one, I guess. So. No, Frank, I haven't had to get anybody asked ever to get a money back guarantee or a refund on anything like that, but then I never had a failed masking agent either, so I don't know.
So the masking agent has always worked for you?
Yeah,
that's what you're
saying. I never. It's actually very funny because, you know, why not? I mean, it's perfectly reasonable for the guy to expect the product that he paid $50 for to work, but big bad corporation wouldn't give the record, so he probably never got his money back.
Yeah.
So with that candidate experience today, he would probably go on Glassdoor and rate you negatively for that.
You're right. I hadn't thought of the follow-on implication in today, and it was certainly this event was, I would say, pre-Glassdoor, but probably close to. Do you know how long they've been around? They've been along, 7 or 8 years maybe?
Is right. I'll bet you somebody could tweet it to us, but I don't know.
Yeah.
7 or 8.
Hey, that's funny.
The statute of limitations on horror stories. I wondered if you could cite the law. No. So, what's your next story?
The next story was I was working HR for a technology company at the time, and really learning more HR. My background has come more out of the talent acquisition staffing side. So I was learning some of the HR practices. I had responsibility for a site with about 200 employees at a call center type site, some technology, programmers and whatnot. And one of our employees showed up at my door one day and said, "I think we have a problem with one of our colleagues." And I said, "Well, what's the problem?" And he said, "Well, his profile is on the state sexual offenders site, and I'm not sure we should have people like that working here." I said, "Well, gosh, okay, so tell me where you found this information, if it's, you know, a state-run site," and actually many states have these now, where they, you know, they post profiles of convicted under, you know, certain guidelines that they've set up within the states. They post profiles of certain convicted folks. And in looking at it, you know, we validated that it was an accurate state-run record, and it did, in fact, show that he was convicted of several felony charges. That these special sites are set up for to alert the public or the neighbors or whatever. And so I had on my hands kind of a, okay, well, what do I do now? And I went to, I went to his employment application, which we had one of the standard, and I think many employers have on their applications, "Have you ever been convicted of a felony?" And he had answered no. And so I guess the decision was pretty easy from there to say, "Well, sir, you lied on your application." So I had to have a meeting with him, say, is this your application? Is that your signature? I want to ask you again if, you know, this part that you've answered in the negative – We may have information that indicates that you have in fact been convicted of a felony. And he said, yes, I have been. And yes, I answered that question untruthfully. So we had to have a termination, one of those walkout kind of meetings with him. And he said it felt like it was time to do something new anyways. I mean, he had been there, I guess, several years, 3-4 years anyways with the company. Felt like it was time to do something new. Now, one of the things that I've always thought of that I didn't do well there, which was follow up with the guy that brought it to my attention and say, why are you looking at state websites for, you know, criminal sexual offenders? So, but I probably, in retrospect, should have done a better follow-up with the guy that brought it to my attention. But I guess you have to always weigh that in, you know, you want your employees to bring legitimate concerns to your attention without pushing back on them too hard. So that was kind of an interesting, for me, a learning experience, as it was fairly early on in my management of HR practices.
You know, that's actually a really good serious point, because, you know, there are all kinds of reasons someone might bring forward an allegation which may or may not be true, right? I mean, workplace friction and some of the stuff we've talked about earlier in the week, you know, like workplace romances and bad judgment and all the things that people, bad decisions that people do. So it's not clear cut, right? Did you do anything extra to verify besides the look at the website and talk to him? Did you seek any other sources or anything, or was that just basically, it was just straightforward?
Yeah, it was pretty straightforward, and because it was a state-run website, I mean, we verified that it was a state-run website. We verified that that was the individual that they were listing and presenting.
Okay.
So, we decided to go at it, and I did get some support from a higher up HR executive in the company. We kind of walked through it in a discussion format, but it was taken on as a question. You know, is this your application? Is this your signature? Is this answered truthfully? So it gave him the opportunity to say, no, I didn't provide you with truthful information. I mean, in retrospect, if we would have had to pursue it, if he would have said, no, that's not me on the website or something like that, or no, I didn't understand this question on the application, but he actually saw where he was with the information that we had. So
yeah, so some folks on Twitter on the back channel are commenting that, like, with the ban the box laws that are kind of developing, you know, in states, kind of state by state right now, that box is not on many applications anymore, or some form of that box.
You're exactly right, and that's right, Mike.
You know,
in the last year, employers have been pulling that off of applications, particularly employers that do business across multiples of states. I've seen a lot of employers just choose to take it off of their applications in total, because having separate applications and has always been a bit of a bugaboo, because there's always been a couple of states that were outliers with respect to what you were and were not allowed to have on their states. But there's enough that have gone to that ban the box that a lot of employers have chosen to just take it off the application. So yeah, now you would have less kind of less insight to something like that, or you would have to take, I suppose, a different path towards resolution, or towards, you know, any sort of discipline on something like that.
Yep. Yep, no doubt. So let me do a quick reset, Frank. This is Mike Vandervoort, and co-hosting today with Nisha on Drive Through HR. Our guest is Frank Zupan, who's a longtime friend of mine and of the show, I think, even though we only have him on about every third year, apparently. Whiner. Anyway.
No, and Frank is talking HR horror stories with us. Our hashtag for the show is DTHR, and the hashtag for the theme week is HR horror stories. So if you're listening and you want to follow along on Twitter, you can find stuff there. There's some pretty decent back channel chat going on. So Frank, before the show started, you sort of made an off the cuff remark about I wonder what HR horror stories will look like 10 years from now with social media, right?
Sure.
And I'm not asking you to forecast that exactly, but what your last story brought to mind was like, and I don't know if you've run into anything like this, but I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've received comments or you know, kind of reports like you get, but it wasn't like, hey, so and so is on a state, you know, legal, like on a state board where he committed a crime. It's like so and so said this on Facebook, and so and so is talking about that on Facebook, or they're, you know, or somebody's posting pornographic pictures on. You know, have you run into any of that?
You know, my my work more recently has just not been HR related, so or directly in respects to having to do investigations, having to do resolutions, anything like that. I've been focused in the talent acquisition and then leadership development and talent development areas. So I'm quite certain there's a lot more of that going on with employees dialoguing, employees' family members dialoguing on, you know, on Facebook or Twitter or whatever. And when they use company names, most companies have pretty easy methods of looking for mentions of their brands out on the major channels. Whether individuals realize that or not, most companies just do that as a matter of course, and it's not from an HR standpoint, it's really more from a marketing standpoint. You know, you want to see where brand mentions are. And so when brand mentions are brought up in strange contexts, I think it usually becomes a case file somewhere, doesn't it?
I think so. Do you do anything, you know, I mean, most talent people don't do social media background checks per se, but do you do anything like that in that direction with candidates or any horror stories there, or am I just fishing in the wrong pond with you right now?
No, well, I can tell you with me, I don't. I've tried to steadfastly stay away from that. And I know there's kind of an open season out there with respect to both how talent acquisition and hiring managers use the access to information that they may have, you know, how they might use it in the hiring process. Personally, I keep that out of the hiring process unless it has a very distinct and specific part of the job qualifications, which in a couple times over the last several years I've hired people to be social media marketing, you know, professionals.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a specific qualification that person brings that legitimately I think can be attached to your evaluation and selection process. Outside of that, I don't know. I don't have enough confidence that there's any sort of standard or consistent way to look at that information that can help the hiring process, so the evaluation and selection process. So,
Nisha, you want to jump in
Yep, absolutely. Well, Frank, while you were talking about the information, you know what, throughout our HR horror stories, we have been sharing the bad experiences that we have ever had throughout our career. But when it comes to, you know, taking some precautions to not have this experience, not have this, or to kind of do some precautions like give a clarity on policies and procedures, or not taking bad decisions, or not taking bad judgment, or not doing bad judgment, what do you recommend to our HR and recruiting professionals to do? You know, we all know that common sense is not that common anymore. That's why we are having this kind of HR horror stories. But yet, some of the actions that we can take in order to, you know, take it as a precaution, to do as a precaution, what do you suggest?
That's a great question, Nisha, because that speaks a lot to, you know, not only hiring practices, but really ongoing employment practices and cultural practices within companies. Number one, I think companies are well served when they're transparent with their expectations, because different companies have different expectations. Maybe about, and let's use an example, behavior outside the office. There are some companies who have expectations that are set and well communicated, that, you know, you're expected to always be representing whatever the brand of the company or whatever. There are other companies that aren't as interested in what their employees might be doing when they leave the workplace. But being transparent and actually being effective in your communication of those expectations can never hurt. It's always going to help reduce some of the risk of, you know, of having to go into, you know, whether it's a, you know, an investigation or a resolution or any sort of discipline. I just am always a big advocate of that transparent setting of expectations.
Mm-hmm. Well, Frank, in the beginning of the show, you kind of talked a little bit about your initial career challenges and then the horror stories that you had in the initial part of your career. And we know that you started your career as an HR professional and then transitioned to a recruiting expert. So you know both the industry, HR industry and recruiting industry. But take us to those time where you were in you were a fresher in your career and you had to deal with your HR horror story, but then nobody was there to help you out, or if at all, if there were somebody was there to help you out, how did you tackle it?
Well, you tackle it by, you know, trying to determine what the best decision path forward is. It's like going through any other decision process. What information do I have? How can I, you know, validate or have confidence in the information and then try to make a decision going forward? I mean, one that I was personally involved with that I did not have HR support around me was when several years ago, I took a job directly reporting to an owner of a company, and it was in the Washington, D.C. area, and found out that the operation of the company was not up to what, you know, the standards that I might hold for my employer. And he had a personal relationship with one of my peers at the company, so there was an interesting entanglement there. And we didn't have an HR department. So I had to look at, you know, the behaviors, the actions, the expectations, and make a business decision. I made a business decision to leave the company at the time based on those things. So that's, you know, I guess an instance that speaks to your question of what do you do when you don't have, because, it, you know, it's interesting. And I, Nisha, I thought of this kind of topic on the way to work this morning. I was thinking about the percentage of employees in the U.S. that do not have HR support, professional level HR support in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the percentage would probably surprise a lot of us when we think of the service industry workers, whether they're in, you know, independently run restaurants or even restaurant chains, or, you know, the awful lot of work environments don't have maybe a go-to to help resolve problems or begin a resolution process with respect to employment problems. That's got to be a unique and interesting dynamic that I think is growing, I would guess. And Mike, you probably know a lot more about that than I do. Is that percentage of the workforce growing? Did we lose Mike?
No,
I'm on mute. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
I was typing on Twitter and answering some questions, so I was on mute. throw that question back there to me again, Frank. What was the question? I'm not good at multitasking on this show yet.
The percentage of workers, we all know that the percentage of workers in the U.S. that are in the service industries has been growing dramatically, right? And
right.
Service industry workers are, my thought is, are less probable to have on-site HR support with them in the business place because of the construct of many of the restaurant businesses, businesses. Are there statistics on, you know, the growth both in the service industry workers and in actual HR support of employees, on-site HR support?
I don't really know the statistics. I honestly have never really, you know, read a – I mean, I can tell you anecdotally for sure from my most recent past employer, we had about one – I mean, so there were two things that happened. For true HR coverage, you had about 60 to 80 stores covered by one HR rep. But there was a lot more push down of empowerment decision making to the local management team. So at Publix, a lot of the HR decisions, you know, inside the store were handled by the local management team with guidance from HR through a phone call. And I think that happens in a lot of service industries or places where you have, you know, a lot of field operations strung out because they can't man them with a full-time person, so the process changes. I just don't know the breakout, but I know for sure what it was like at Publix, and you're exactly spot on for that anecdotal situation anyway. In a restaurant, it's very, very similar. But it's definitely it's definitely a different model than what you're used to in manufacturing or something like that, for sure. Hey, we've got 4 minutes, Frank, and we're winding up this week of HR horror stories. Do you have, like, one short, awesome tale to leave us with to close the week out in grand style?
Wow. One that I was close to and not directly involved in an HR capacity.
Yep.
Exactly. Was being with a company that had a C-level executive removed by the board for some transgressions that became very public, and I mean very public, like front page of the newspaper public. That can create a very unusual dynamic, both within a company and within the HR organization within the company, if it catches you blindsided or flat-footed and not, you know, being out in front of that. Most HR people like to be out in front of some of the problems, be very involved in investigations, resolutions, things like that. But when something so big and so visible might blow up and literally a board of a company and some of these reputation management consultants that they're going to bring in are involved all of a sudden, it takes on a whole different dynamic, I can tell you that.
Yeah. We have 90 seconds left, Frank. So we didn't really ask you to tell us where people could find you on those social media places. I think you still use those, right?
Yeah, I still use them every once in a while. And I use my own name out there. So on Twitter, I'm Frank Zupan. And I think I'm still Frank Zupan on Facebook. I don't know if Tammy made me change to Frank Colson Zupan. I know she recently had to change because of something that happened. Somebody assumed that was her legal name instead of just her Facebook name or something like that. I don't know if that's an HR horror story in and of itself. I haven't delved into it yet.
Got to do the research or ask your wife. She'll tell you for sure. So we're just about out of time. Thanks for being our guest today. It was great to have you on. It was great to catch up with you and close the week out with some not only some good stories, but some dropping some good knowledge on us about good HR practices as well. Got anything else going on in the next? You doing Disrupt HR? Anything like that anytime soon?
We just finished a Disrupt HR V.2 here in Cleveland. We had, I think, 240 folks attend at a really cool venue. We had Trish McFarland.
We're done. Sorry, Frank.
We got cut off. Nah, no problem.
Take care.
Hey, you too. Talk to you later.
Have fun. Yep, thanks.
Yep, bye.